Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mass. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I loved my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Those things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God. Letting go of God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is November the 21st, the day before Thanksgiving, 2018. If that's not the time and date where you are, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. I'm Daughter Five, and as usual, we have on the phone Wombat. Say hi, Wombat.
Long time no see, guys. I'm so happy to be here again.
And
it's going to be a really fun show.
Yeah, very good. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while since I've had you on the show in, well, at least a week or two. And happy to have you back. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And in case you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you about them and how you can connect with them after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
I already knew about it. That's why we have the whole group here on the show today. We're really excited. Yes, the show is a little girly, but I think the transformation when I think it wasn't an Adora turns into She-Ra is really great.
Yeah.
And I think little girls are going to love it, and I think grown guys can love it too. The characters are so good, and it's really, really funny.
Yeah, I don't think you'll find that show on Community Access TV, but you will find the Atheist Call-In TV show on Community Access TV. That's ctvknox.org, streaming online, and you can also find it on Comcast Channel 12. Matter of fact, it's on just as we speak right now. It's on Comcast Channel 12 in Knoxville on Wednesday nights. Starts at 6:30, goes off at 7:30. So set your DVR to record it, but listen to our show, and you can watch their show later. It's been going for 8 years, and it's hard to find someone who knows about it. 8 years on the air, but very few people have heard of it. Anyway, and in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are lots of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as they are in rotation. Now, Wombat, I believe you brought a buku guest with you tonight. You want to walk us through that a little bit?
Sure. I would say we have Terry on the line again. He's a guest on our show. Terry, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Cool.
Welcome, Terry.
And we also have Street Knowledge, or my friend Raul. He has a street epistemology channel, and he's here representing again from great state of Virginia, right?
Maryland now.
Oh, what? He moved. Okay. But, I got a move coming up pretty soon, too, and I guess more on that later. And we have our friend Nathan. I met him when I gave my talk at Tri-State Freethinkers about 2 weeks ago. And he's a really, really cool guy, receptive, former evangelical, and we really wanted to get into his story as well. Nathan, what's up? How are you?
Very good, very good. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Do either of you guys, Terry, Raul, or Nathan, have a DJ name? I told you to come up with one. So what do you guys want to be called for the rest of the show?
Truth Seeker.
Truth Seeker. For Nathan, right?
For Terry.
Terry is a Truth Seeker. Raul, what do you got?
You know what? I honestly, I cannot think of one. I know that's really lame, but
well, if you're real, if your name is Raul, you don't need a DJ name. That's a
let's
cool
go,
name.
Let's go with Raul.
Yeah. All right, Raul, lame DJ name. You're at the bottom of the list so far. Nathan, what do we got?
So I put way too much thought into this actually because you introduced me to the SE group and they all kind of have nicknames on there. So I was thinking, what is my nickname? And they all seem food related.
Yeah.
So I went with deep dish.
Nice. Very good.
You know, you dish, you talk publicly, you talk, you know,
philosophy
and deep, you know,
deep thought.
You're ready to hit the beat to the YouTube channel. I love it. Deep dish, truth seeker. Raul, you need one more. Here's your last chance. Raul, give me something good.
All right, how about this? I like spicy food, so let's go with jalapeno.
I like that. I love jalapenos.
All right, Wombat, checking in with truth seeker, jalapeno, and deep dish. Larry, I have a really, really cool article that I wanted to share with everybody.
No, don't forget my name is Doubter 5 now.
Oh, I'm sorry. How could I forget you? Doubter 5, Larry.
Yep.
So the show today is about an article that I found on the internet called Atheism is Dead. Consider This the Obituary. And it's an obituary on atheism. I sent it out to all of you guys, but if you ever want to find it yourself, it's on rightsmart.com/atheism. And you'll be able to read basically an article that basically pronounces how atheism is dead in the new age that we live in today. As of 2018 in November, atheism is dead. And I just wanted to see, like, if we can go over and give our thoughts as we go down. Larry, do you want to help post this?
Well, sure. But I read the article, and I know that you all have been discussing it. I have it up on the screen right now, but I'd like you all to go ahead and get started. Jump in there and tell me what your thoughts are, at least the initial thoughts, if you don't mind.
Tell you who probably has thoughts on it right now. This is Mr. Jalapeno coming up to the bat. Jalapeno, can you give us like your brief intro maybe of like what the article might be about and your initial thoughts on it, and then we can go from there.
Sure. So basically the author, I think his name was Jay Allen, if I remember correct, but he basically argues that atheism is essentially a failed hypothesis and that it doesn't work given all that we've learned, that originally it may have been a viable hypothesis to hold when we didn't know about things like the complexity of DNA, things like that, but that now, given what we know, like the big things like the Big Bang, stuff like that, it's just not a viable hypothesis. And it's been defeated essentially by the fact that it cannot, this is one of his main arguments, it cannot account for some of the things that Christianity, from his perspective, gives an account for.
Yeah, but the thing about it is Christianity just gives claims. They just claim it. They don't provide any evidence. And that's one of the problems I had with it. He says that God is not dead. The evidence for God's existence is overwhelming, but he doesn't supply any, and nobody ever does besides pointing to the Bible, and the Bible itself is the claim. Everybody else is just repeating what it says. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there is no evidence, but for him, it's overwhelming. I'd like him to present some of it.
It sounds like we have the issue where his position is, if I can defeat atheism, and that means my version of theism is correct. And so he spends the entire article basically trying to break down atheism under the assumption that proves that his God exists. And so what I really have an issue with more is that fundamental premise, but really the task that he's taken to try to prove that atheism is wrong. I think probably we could start at the very beginning. Nathan, I'd love to get your thoughts. He defines atheism in a pretty interesting way. He has one source that he pulls up from that came from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy that says that atheism means the negation of theism. It's the explicit denial of the existence of a God. Do you think that definition fits everybody? I would love to hear your opinion.
Sure. So I was raised in a fundamental evangelical church. My father's a minister, and so I can see through both lenses. And I mean, I'm not even joking when I say
you know, when I was a kid, if somebody says atheist, I would equate that to the same as Satan worshiper. So, you know, some of these people, they're coming at it from a skewed perspective to begin with.
Sure.
But I think his whole article is based on the fact that atheism denies flat out that there is a God, and I don't know any atheists like that. I'm sure there are, and I'm sure that they've chosen to live their life as such, but most of the people I know, if you supplied good evidence, they would believe. They would, you know, so I think, you know, it starts off right with a fallacy from the, you know, and I just don't know anybody like that. I don't think, he portrays atheists as ones that won't change their mind when we all know that it's the, you know, the Christians, quite frankly, that the theists that can't change their mind because they are only stuck on one book and one interpretation.
And they're there under the pain of eternal damnation. They are literally stuck in that position.
Right, and the hilarity of that is all the different denominations, you know, and it's like, I'm a Christian, you're a Christian, but we go to different churches and we have different beliefs, and it's like, you'd think the creator of the universe could be a little bit more clear.
Right.
Truth Seeker, what do
you think? What was interesting to me was that he had to redefine atheism in order to kill it.
Ah, I love that. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and it just goes back to the basic thing that words are descriptive and not prescriptive. You know, like if we use the word football, it could be used to describe European football, American football, maybe something we haven't even heard of. So you had to create this false dilemma in the language to get to his point.
The way I see it, there's like, for example, there are Christians, and there are a lot of different kinds of Christians. Maybe there are some Christians with red hats. Maybe there are Christians with mustaches. Maybe there's Christians that have no hat or mustaches on at the moment. But you can't just point at a group of people that have, say, for example, a red hat on and say, hey, this is Christianity, and this is why red hats are evil, and this is why, then therefore, showing red hats are dumb or mustaches are out of style. That defeats all Christianity. Yes, there are atheists that claim that there's no God, that they know that, but that's not what makes them an atheist. The fact that makes them an atheist is that they don't believe in a God claim.
Right.
And so that's the commonality among all atheists. It's just, hey, I'm not a theist. Yeah. And a theist is a person that believes in a God. Mm-hmm. Atheist is a person that's not a theist. And to make the skewed definition of atheism as a positive claim that there's no God kind of misses the point of what actually makes someone an atheist. And is either a straw man that's unintentional or a purposeful moving around of the posts to try to create, as Truth Seeker said, a false dilemma to basically try to defeat atheism on a false claim or a false premise. And that's where I began to be like, oh, man, I was really looking forward to seeing like a really fact-checked worthy article, but now it's just silly from the top down.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about not only him changing the definition of atheism, but changing what the burden of proof for atheism is?
Right. Yeah.
Because according to him, the burden of proof for atheism, what we have to show in order to convince him is that we can provide an explanation for instance, the origin of the universe that is better than the explanation offered by Christianity.
Theirs is not an explanation. It's just a claim. You know, their God did it, and he did it by speaking. What kind of explanation is that for the creation of the universe? I mean, how can you explain the universe by an entity that has never been demonstrated to actually exist? I mean, you're stymied from the very beginning, but they consider that a scientific explanation because God, it fits into the scientific worldview.
Right. That applies on a really interesting point, because even if we accepted the burden, and how do I put it, even if we failed to provide the burden of proof that was shifted to us, and we said, okay, fine, it was a God that made everything. Which God? And how can we know any of the characteristics that God's never presented?
Right.
because we have people from all around the world who have a God claim and say that it was their God that made the sky, their God that made physics as we know it, but they're very different gods and they're not compatible with each other. So who's really right, and what else can we use to figure out which one of them is actually telling us the truth?
And nobody that I know has ever bridged the gap between, you know, the creator of the universe, okay, a God, you know, and then be able to fill in the blank between a God and their God. You know, a right. God created the universe. Okay, which God is that? But then they can't lay out the logical reasoning to go to show that it's their particular God that did it, other right. than just making claims.
Yeah, that's something that is rarely talked about, but often comes up. Like, it's like, well, you know, I just have a feeling, and I look around, and the world is so complex, and it's mm-hmm. beautiful, and, you know, and it's like, well, you know, what about, like, the viruses that kill people, and, like, I mean, there's not, you know, there's yeah. some evil. Oh, well, it's because Adam fell, and it's like the connection between, okay, maybe there's a power, higher power with, I'm going to believe the Bible now. That's a huge jump that no one ever, like, really thinks about.
Right.
And I think that's, they feel it. Right?
Feelings
I feel it.
Facts.
Like, I'm in, right. But that's how they all, and that's how I used to
yeah.
describe it. Like, oh, I was in church and I felt good and I have friends and they all believe it and that's what my parents believe in. Like, and it feels normal to them. And so it's all based on feelings.
Well, from their earliest childhood, they go to church and they get these feelings because of the music and the speech and then the camaraderie. They get this warm, fuzzy feeling inside, and the preacher is always right there ready to tell them that feeling that they haven't experienced in church before is the Holy Spirit. And then from then on out, whenever they get that feeling, they feel like that's evidence of the Holy Spirit, even though it's just an evidence of community and camaraderie with your fellow man and being moved by music and good oratory.
I mean, I went to a basketball game last year, and it was a sold-out game, and it was just one of the most raucous groups. Like, it was just a fantastic time,
uh-huh.
and it was electric. It was just, it was a feeling like the game was so close, and it's that crowd feeling. You know, we're all cheering, we're doing that.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. They feel this, like, you know, power in the numbers of people there that are all doing the same thing, singing the same song. And there's something about that. But I do think that there is a problem with the naming conventions of, like, you know, it's humanist, free thinker, atheist, agnostic. Like, and when you say agnostic, a lot of people think, well, you're just 50-50. When I say agnostic, I mean, I'm like 99.9, you know, and I do think that that's a problem in the community of defining what we believe. And it's hard to do that in one word. And, just like it's hard for them in Christianity, it's like, well, that's not my Christianity. That's not how I interpret the Bible.
Sure.
So it is a challenge to try to get to the truth of even the definition to be able to talk about this.
One of the benefits of SE is that you don't have to limit someone to just one word to describe themselves, that you're willing to open yourself up to a conversation with them and allow them to describe where they're coming from with no pressure and from an unbiased perspective so that they can describe what they really mean, what they say. And even when they give you a label, you can ask, what do you mean by that label? What does that mean to you? And that way you can get that really good connection with people, because you're right in the sense that, you know, one atheist compared to another atheist might have a different idea. It's the same thing can go from one person who says they're a Christian to another person who says they're a Christian. And I think what's worthwhile is that through this SE hobby that we have, to go the extra effort and ask the questions to help someone realize where they're coming from, because maybe they're using a label without really understanding how they got there either. But I think, yeah, that's one of the benefits of having conversations with people rather than just sticking to a tribalistic label and going from there.
Sure.
So, do you guys want to read an excerpt, a little excerpt from the article and address some of his points?
Yeah. So there's this really, so we started off with a straw man argument where he misdefined or mis, purposely skewed the reason what atheists are. And then I think he followed it up with basically, there's just so many weird things in this article. But anyway.
I think he kind of just carries on with that theme all the way to where he says that atheism hasn't given anything to science.
Right. That does come up later. But he does shift the burden of proof and says atheism hasn't, like, presented its argument to make it proof or to prove its case. And really, it's the theists that have made the positive claim, and it's just atheists that are rejecting that until they have better evidence for it. But then, as we start getting into, like, the nuts and bolts, he has an excerpt from a Pew Research Center, a survey done in 2009. I don't know where, but it basically shows that, like, 98% of the population believes in a god of some sort, more or less. And some of them are atheists, and some of them claim they're agnostic. So clearly that proves that they're different things. But basically the survey that he's done that shows that like 98% of people are religious is sort of like a argument from the bandwagon. It's like a demonstration of everyone believes in a god except for these few people who are like so out on the outer limits. What's wrong with them? Have you guys seen that part of the article? And I guess, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, it's just sort of irrelevant. It's just, you know, so what if I mean, I don't even know if his figures are correct, but it's just kind of like, so what?
No, they're not.
They're way off. Not only that, but like, he doesn't even nail all the versions of Christianity that are here. It's like, you're either a Catholic, a mainline Protestant, or an evangelical Protestant. And that's literally the only three versions of Christianity that you have on here.
And he doesn't mention any of the other religions. I mean, other than Jewish, and that's the only one. He didn't mention anything about it, Muslims or Hindus or anything like that.
Right.
Which is
a
skewed report right there. But he doesn't bother to mention it. I mean,
and they separately list agnostics away from atheists as if they were different things. And again, it's like those aren't mutually exclusive terms. They could both be the same thing. So who really made this back in 2009 when maybe they just didn't know what was going on? And is it possible that they didn't get enough of a sample size to properly reflect all of the United States of America?
Yeah.
Maybe they did this right outside of a church. Protestant church at that.
And, I mean, who cares? At the end of the day, who cares? I mean, let's say nobody else believes it. Does that mean it's wrong? There's no, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care if there was no other atheists out there besides us on the call. Like, it doesn't necessarily prove anything.
Oh, well, that's a great point.
Well, what gets me is his smugness. He says, let's see, I'm trying to find it, I had a second ago. He says, the conflation of atheism and agnosticism is a recent trend of the so-called new atheists. We try not to conflate those because atheism and agnostic is a separate thing, and we know the difference. And you can be an atheist and an agnostic. I mean, it's not mutually exclusive. But he goes on to say, those stereotypical atheists who may or may not have neck beards, wear fedoras, or carry themselves in an unwarranted sense of arrogance, you know the ones.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you talk about self-righteous, and I guess that just fits right in with his theology, but can you be any more condescending? I mean, he's...
There you go. That's probably the word.
It's kind of like I feel like I have to wash my hands after I hold the paper and get through reading it.
So he is, in a sense, trying to bait conversation where an atheist that might be level-headed who comes in might be less so after reading the article, which would only, like, promote comments and views for him to, like, take down. Because if you ever put someone on the defensive, then they're spending more time defending the claims that you put on them than the real point of the matter or the real crux of the position. So I think the real crux of the situation is theists are presenting a claim and they need to reach a standard of evidence before I can believe it. And until then, my best thing that I can say is, hey, I don't believe that yet. And that, because I don't believe it, makes me an atheist. I'm willing to change my mind, but it's up for you to do the work, theists. And it's not up for me to present anything. My position is I don't know until I have better evidence. And I can demonstrate that I don't know. It's just, and I can demonstrate that I don't believe it because I don't know. But it's up to you to actually say that this is what reality is. And I'm waiting for you to do that.
This isn't a piece for us. This isn't meant to convert, you know, this is a piece of, this is an affirmation piece to, yes, I that confirms their worldview, you know, like, and we all are prey to that. You know, I do it all the time. If somebody I don't agree with, I block them on Facebook because I just don't want to see their backwards, you know, thoughts on things. And that's a dangerous place to be. I mean, that's why I like the street epistemology, is because it opens the doors for communication.
We also got a call on the phone right now.
Okay.
Man, this is just a loaded call.
Excuse me, we have a caller. I'm going to try to put him on here so we can hear him a little bit.
Can you hear me clearly?
So we're probably on mute right now.
Yeah. Okay, can you go for it? Do you have a question for the panel?
Yeah, so I'm curious, as atheist, how would you respond to the Pascal wager from Christian?
Okay, respond to the Pascal's wager?
Yes, and I asked the question that because I have a background from that, but I would love to hear your opinion.
Okay. Well, first of all,
I
have an old article about that I've written and put on my website, digitalfreethought.com. Go to the blog section, you should be able to read it. And also have a video on YouTube called Pascal's Wager is Invalid. But for the first few things, is how do we know which God we're talking about? I mean, every civilization has their religion, and when they use Pascal's Wager, say you ought to believe in our God or go to hell. Well, civilization A has a different God than civilization B, and C, and D, and E. So how do we know which God we're betting on? Every time you go to church, if you got the wrong God, you're just making the true God angrier. Also, what if there are no souls? What if souls don't exist? What if there is no afterlife? There's all kinds of problems with Pascal's wager, and I would recommend you take some time and go into and do a search for that and see if you can't find out some more of the reasons. We've got four people on the show right now. Does anybody else want to answer that question?
Yeah. I would say that the thing about Pascal's wager, so you're basically saying you should believe because if you don't, you'll go to hell, which is basically a subtle way of threatening somebody to believe what you want them to believe.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, you've just forfeited the argument. Like the argument, you're not giving reasons to believe. You're just using threat and intimidation.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Let's go.
I like to say that it's not, they're not trying to convince you that to believe is the correct way, but it's the one that gives you the most benefit. So it's not really trying to convince you of the truth of a God belief. It's trying to convince you of the efficacy of believing in God, which is just dumb because there's so many different gods and stuff. Anyway, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have to do a station identification, do some announcements, and we'll get back to the show here in just a minute, a little bit. I hope that satisfied your question. I didn't get your name, but did that help out?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to discuss with you more. So, I mean, if you can get back to me, that's going to be great. I mean, or I can call back.
Why don't you call back in the second half of the show then?
Alrighty, thank you, Larry. See you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Did everybody hear him okay? This is like moving a microphone over the phone and putting it on speakerphone. So it's not
That's
really
fine.
That
bad. We can deal with it after the break, during the break.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to do a station identification and a song. The song is going to be God Said by Anthony David. And we'll be back in about 5 minutes. And talk to you then.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people may not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French, and they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. Mm. True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal. Ever since, they have been cursed.
Come shake the hand of my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim. He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make the lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks through me. And it's always positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. Don't you put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said.
So you're praying for the death of the President of the United States. Do you think it's appropriate to say something like that? Or?
I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying.
In the name of the one who made us all, I will hide behind these walls from my enemies. Oh, by the power bestowed from up above, I will conquer you because it is my destiny. And with the righteous hand, I will bring you to your knees. I will strip you of your freedom without mercy. And when the earth quakes and the blood runs in the sand, there will be no final stand for the unworthy. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said.
Radio Hour.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti,
Knoxville, Tennessee.
And the people might not
feel
want to talk
free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. Welcome back to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and this is WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's talk about some of the free thought groups that you can join here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. It's got over almost 880 members now, and if you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheists.org. We meet once a week at Barley's Taproom Pizzeria for a happy hour of food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome every Tuesday, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. Also, the Rationalists of East Tennessee have been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. Just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. Then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie, community, and any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with, come on down. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Earlier in the show, we talked about the Atheist Call-In TV show. It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192, or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you'd like to find archives of this show, this radio show, just go to digitalfreethought.com, click on the blog button, and then choose the menu option for the Atheist Radio Podcast. And you'll be able to choose from over 120 of these episodes. And welcome back, Wombat and assembled guests. Where would you like to pick up on this topic now?
Let's go into a topic Beatrice was wanting to get into. He wants to get into the science of the article. And I guess just before we jump in, if anyone else wants to also tackle Pascal Wager, the response to the caller on the phone, I'm totally cool with it too. But open up the floor to you guys. You guys want to talk about science? Pascal Wager?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say about this claim of atheists has given almost nothing to science.
Okay.
And this might be where he's sort of correct in one part of his premise on this, is that, you know, there was a lot more God belief in the past. And that the kind of history of science and how it came up, that, you know, they figured that there was laws to the universe given by a lawgiver, and they eventually got rid of the lawgiver and kept the law. And so they didn't need a god to make predictions about how natural processes were going on. So I kind of likened it to a bike with training wheels. You know, once we take the training wheels off and the bike's going in a good direction, do we need to put the training wheels back on?
Right, right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah.
I found sometimes that religion has gotten in the way of scientific progression in really, really, you know, explicit and destructive ways, like where they would actually, like, arrest people who claim scientific theories based on a secular perspective rather than one on a god. Like, I think heliocentric theory, where, like, the Earth is not the center of the universe, the guy who figured out how to break that was arrested for the rest of his life. Galileo was arrested for the rest of his life. Socrates, for asking questions, is accused for being an atheist and forced to drink hemlock. Charles Darwin, you read his, you know, first expression on evolution, he's very, very tentative to not make any of the higher powers in the church angry with him, or else they would pull funding from him. And I feel like you look around yourself, and while you have all these atheists presenting very good ideas of, you know, reason, astronomy, biology, or what fields would become biology as a result, you have a very conservative religious front trying to maintain the status quo because they have a good thing going and forcing science to be inhibited in its progress.
Yeah. One thing that...
Yeah, that's where the analogy falls apart.
Yeah. One thing that
the training wheels were never there to begin with.
Yeah. Is that the early scientists...
Oh, great one.
The early scientists had to be Christian because Christianity or Muslim or Islam or whatever, because that's where the power was. If you were a scientist and you did not teach things that went with the Christian dogma, the church would then stand in your way and often suppress those results, burning your books or papers or whatever. And if you said anything actually against Christian dogma, then you could be tortured or burned or killed for that. So nowadays, people, the Christians, will look at science and say, look at how many of the scientists of the past were Christians. And they don't realize that they had to be Christians in a Christian society.
And isn't that like such a reflection of the God that they believe in? Mm-hmm. I mean, they worship a God who says, essentially, if you don't believe the right thing, I'm going to torture you in flames forever.
Right. And if,
But he loves you.
Right. Okay. But when they're doing science, they're not doing religion. I mean, when they're actually doing experiments, they're not doing religion. Religious examinations in the nature have resulted in no discoveries or advancements whatsoever. It's always been the science that they do that has brought advancement forward.
I think of that every time I'm driving down the highway here in Cincinnati, where I'm at. There's a church. It's called Four Corners, right? And so, you know, scripture in the Bible where, you know, spread the word to the four corners. Of course, there is no corners because it's a globe, right?
Right.
Right. But the logo for the church is a circle with arrows in four different directions.
Oh no.
But it's still called Four Corners. There's literally no corners on their logo. And it reminds me every time I see that, you know, science consistently proves things in the Bible wrong. It's never the opposite. It's never science confirming, you know, that the Bible was right.
You know, or the Bible overturning a scientific discovery. It never works that way.
Or more so, not so much that it proves that it's wrong, it's just that it proves that you don't have to believe it because there's better explanations that are out there. And that it shows that the claims that religion are presenting are not founded in anything that's reliable and therefore do not warrant or deserve anyone's confidence. And I find that to be so much more appealing, only in the sense of it's totally fine to just say, hey, I don't know if my religion is true yet. Like, that's a valid position. Saying you don't know is a great place to be. And saying, hey, I have better standards of evidence for why water freezes when I put it in the freezer, and until religion can come with that good of an example for something so much more incredible, until God can present himself in as clear of a way as science can show how water freezes, or why glass breaks when we drop it on the ground, or why it gets hot when the sun's out. Like, until religion can at least meet that standard, I'm fine with just saying, I don't know if any of that's true because I have better explanations for things that I'm willing to go for, and I have a better standard of evidence that can at least relatively tell me things on a more reliable basis. And that's all I'm asking religion to do. Can you present a reliable way to come to your conclusion? And it turns out...
Go for it.
Don't let me get on the
table. Well, one thing that the author really focuses on is the idea of explanatory power. And he seems to have the idea that as long as I can explain something like the origin of the universe, then my argument wins. But the problem with that is that we can come up, if we're just like sitting around thinking about what might explain something such a mystery as the origin of the universe itself. Like, if we're just sitting around brainstorming what might explain that, we can actually come up with, if we're creative enough, we can come up with all different types of explanations, theistic and non-theistic. Like, there's so many and we know so little about that. It doesn't work to simply say you have an explanation.
Right.
Creator of the universe?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, wouldn't the creator of the universe have written a book that would have included some, you know, even if, you know, as a, you know, humans, we weren't ready to know how Wi-Fi worked, or, you know, like, I, you know what I'm saying? Like, that a car could be built, or that a cellular, like, all the things that have come through science, not religion, wouldn't he know that that was possible, and wouldn't he have addressed some of that, or put us on the right path to discovering that stuff?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that is absolutely silly to me, just simply because, like, there is no argument there, because there's nothing. Why wouldn't the creator of the universe written about that?
Right. I've got an article on digitalfreethought.com called What the Bible Could Have Said, which pretty much takes that tack and says, you know, all he had to do is just give us a few words for each one of the major theories that we have, the electron theory or the theory of gravity or any of that stuff. Just a few words, something that they could have understood to get us going and tell us to investigate. But he didn't do anything like that. He just told us to believe or die.
Something like, you know, don't own humans. Don't own other humans might have been nice. Or, you know, like anything like that would have been some better. I could write a more moral book in one sentence. Don't be a jerk.
But we have a really pressing issue that Truthseeker was alluding to, too, is that even if it was true, the vehicle that sent that information to us is incredibly unreliable. And you would imagine that a knowing God would be aware of that.
Open to interpretation.
Oral tradition. Right. Oral tradition. Not very good. Dead languages, yeah. Books that had to be transcribed over and over again by societies and people that didn't have the means of mass producing. Yeah.
And the originals were lost. How did he allow that?
Yeah. Right. So why should anyone take that to 100% confidence, especially now that we have so many different variations today on what was originally supposedly said? And so it seems to be the case that even if it was true, we don't have a good way to reliably say which version of it is even true. So therefore, how do we even know that? And if that's the case, maybe we should look on to better things, more productive things. And until that God wants to revise his message and send it to us, the website, or maybe through a phone app, or something like that. Hey, I'm the God app. I'm telling you how to, like, believe in me, like, definitively.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, now we have a better idea. But until then, it's up to that God to figure out how to send his message to us in a reliable format. Because even things that we have now, like faith, aren't reliable. Anyone can have faith, and different people can have faith in different things. You mean completely opposite things. And if everyone's using faith to reach different conclusions, is that really a demonstration that it's a reliable way to believe anything?
A demonstration that's not reliable.
I think if you look at atheism and agnosticism as a spectrum, where you have atheism on one end and then agnosticism on the other end, like, when it comes to a general deistic God who created the universe, unspecified, I'm more on the agnostic end of the spectrum. But if we're talking about an actual claim, actual God, with, like, an artifact like the Bible that we can scrutinize, like, I'm more towards the atheistic end of the spectrum, where I'm like, no, I have good reasons to believe this God doesn't exist.
Well, it's really cool that you think about that in this way. We should really talk about it more. For me, I think, like, the agnostic atheist position is the default position. That is the position everyone should be at, in the sense of, hey, if you don't have enough information to believe something, you don't know if it's true, and you also don't believe that it's true because you don't have any knowledge on it. That is the default place where we all start out when we're born. And we're convinced of things being true by our environment, by the people who tell us things, by the information that we have around us. But we all start as agnostic atheists until we're convinced of something. And then the question is, do we have a good reason to be convinced? And were we convinced for reliable reasons? We can examine that. And if so, then yeah, let's share those methods of how we got convinced. But otherwise, we can go back to the default, which is agnostic atheist. And for me, I think everyone starts off on that same point. It is the default. And it's just a question of how far away did you stray away from the default position? And did you have a good reason to stray away from it? Like, did you become a Gnostic atheist, for example? What convinced you that there was no God? Maybe we should go back to the agnostic atheist position, because it doesn't seem like we have any information to confirm or deny that. And then we're back to, hey, you don't know it, you don't believe it. Where can we go from there? Well, what else is more important? Paying your taxes? Feeding your kids? Mm-hmm. Let's do that instead, then, because we think that's pressing matters. Let's be good people.
Yeah, there are definitely more important things in life to talk about and to argue about. I mean, I see atheism as more of a response to theism, which is what I would say to the author of the article, is that understand that the claim that we're making is not God doesn't exist. The claim that we're making is that we're not convinced by the evidence that you've given for the existence of your God. Like, it's a response to your claim. So any evidence I offer is going to be in the form of addressing why your evidence doesn't meet the standard.
Yeah. It that is an interesting way of looking at it. I think it's like definitely has a response to theism. And in a passive sense is also the initial starting point that we get when the first guy from the village comes in and is like, hey, by the way, I'm God. It's like, wait a second, we don't believe that. What evidence do you have to present it? Burn you guys. Okay, finally. I'm sorry if I'm getting a little off. But, like, say you had a village and no one believed in a God because they never even were introduced to the concept. Like, all those people don't believe in a God. That by default, makes them atheists. And it's not until the first guy in the village walks in and says, hey, I found the sun god. He's on top of the mountain. Nobody go up to the mountain. By the way, I'll represent the sun god. That's when, like, the skepticism starts to hit, and right. You have the responses of, well, I don't believe what you're saying. How do you know that? How'd you figure it out? When can we see the sun god? Like, those are, like, that is the same kind of atheism that exists even way back then to now. And the concept of, like, a new atheist is sort of like a misnomer, because we're asking the same questions, but we haven't gotten the satisfying answers that have defeated our position to begin with. Like, those responses have not been met.
One example that I would like to, like, pose to this gentleman who wrote the article is, like, put yourself in ancient Greece. There you are. Everyone believes in the Greek gods. Everyone believes in Zeus. And they have this story about how lightning bolts come from this great god up on Mount Olympus. And that explains the lightning bolts. There's your explanation. Can you offer a better explanation? And you have no knowledge of electromagnetism or the weather patterns or how the clouds work. You cannot provide a better explanation, but you're just not convinced that it's Zeus on Mount Olympus. Like, are you justified in not believing in Zeus, even though you can't give a better explanation?
Right. No, that's absolutely true.
Like, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know something doesn't mean that you're right. So it's up to you to show that you're right. And if we don't get it the first time, you got to keep working at it. And that's all we're asking, you know, particularly Christians or any kind of religious persuasion to do is, hey, what you're saying right now isn't enough to convince us. The thing that you're saying is so, the thing that you're making a claim for is so incredible that we need a better standard of evidence. We need
especially,
more evidence than just the feelings and faith.
Well, especially if they ask you to tithe 10% of your income or come to work for the church or mow their yard or give up a share of your crop. I mean, it's not just that they want to give you an explanation, take it or leave it, that, you know, there's a good chap. No, they demand you believe their claims on pain of eternal death, and then you have to cough up valuable resources to keep them in a position where they can keep saying it to other people. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
And if you've got that kind of claim where you're asking for resources and it's costing those people something, they got every right in the world to question your claims
right. And
ask for evidence.
Right.
And then, you know, what do? They get on their high horse and get all, self-righteous about it and hurt, you know, saying, how dare you question us? You know, well, you're asking for my resources. I'm going to question you.
There's something a little unsettling. As somebody who kind of went through that and lived in a world where we have the answers, mm-hmm. like we have them. They're all right here in the book. Like, when you are that strong in your belief that, you know, this is how it happened, and when you have to let go of that and you have to step away and say, I don't know, that's really hard to do. And you think, why would I go from a belief where I'm confident to a belief where I'm not confident? It really is a challenge. It definitely takes a paradigm shift. And I think the only way to get people there is for them to understand, you know, how it is they came to know
especially
those things or believe those things.
Yeah, especially if part of it is ostracizing you for daring to question or shunning you. Mm-hmm. It costs a lot of people. It's cost their family, friends, and marriage even, and jobs to do it.
Sure. I mean, my dad is a minister. I mean, I don't have a strong relationship with him because I don't have a lot in common with him.
Yeah.
And I just don't bring it up, and he doesn't bring it up, and, you know, but it, you know, there are other people in worse situations where it's, you know, it's like taking and separating yourself from your tribe, and we are very tribal people. Like, you know, it's a difficult thing to break away from that. It's easier to just go through life and not think deeply about some of those things. And it's comforting because it was
what you're used to around your childhood. But yeah, it's a little unsettling, I think, at least at first, when you realize there's a lot in this world that I will never understand, right. And you have to kind of let it go. You have to kind of let it go, and that's challenging.
Yeah.
And wait for better evidence, and that's actually the best choice. I think we're getting close to the end of the show, and we have so many people on. Let's do last words around the table. That way no one feels rushed.
Sure.
Harry, do you have any last words for the show?
Who, me?
Truth seeker.
I think we covered a lot of the crazy fallacies in this article so far. Just going down through it.
Any more words on Pascal's wager thoughts?
It's always complicated. You know, it'd be, if it was a binary choice of the Christian God or no God, it's a pretty easy choice, but it's even conflated when you have many gods. Right. You know, do I shoot for the best heaven or do I shoot for the least worst hell?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I reconcile that?
Or make up your own religion, for that matter.
I'm going to do that.
There you go.
Not like it hasn't been.
Everyone give me
10%
of your paycheck. It's going to be great. Right. I'm going to invest in someone this way.
Mm-hmm.
Deep Dish, you got any final words?
No, thanks for having me on. We didn't get to talk about one part of the article, and we talked about it on break for a second. I did want to bring up the chart with no references that talks about how atheists have murdered tons of people throughout history or in the last century. And I think that was pretty hilarious, with no evidence to back it up. I don't even think we'd be talking about that article if it wasn't for like the length of it.
Right.
And, clearly somebody put a lot of thought into it, but I don't think that was meant for us. That was meant for affirmation for others.
I will say this, if you want to, we could do this offline and do a really cool show, our study group on the article. We're totally open to that. And Larry, you're always invited to that as well.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Let's see. Jalapeno, my friend, street.
Yo,
mother.
Yo.
I would just say,
like, the main flaw in this guy's reasoning is just that he tries to pitch God of the Gaps logic as, like, he tries to draw the atheist into his playing field because he's using God of the Gaps logic, and he wants you to do the same thing and get you to provide an explanation that is somehow better than the grandioso explanation of this creator God. And that's where he fails, because atheism is not about providing an explanation other than God. It's just saying your explanation doesn't work.
Hmm. Great point. That's a really great point. Really concisely said. And as far as my last words, I would say, hey, why are we making such a fuss about one article on the internet? And I would say, when we're living in a world where a lot of people are giving a lot of money to a church and have not been given back their due with regard to a honest answer with what's going to happen to them, or holding back scientific progress, or taking time away from our family, or turning our eyes away from people who are in need and praying for them instead, giving them our thoughts and prayers, which really have no functional way to help them at all. We could be so much better, and we don't need religions in the gap of effort to help one another. And what we're trying to do as like this quasi activist role of like atheists willing to talk about a position, willing to have conversations with people who are religious, is show them that there's other options out there, and show them that I don't know is not only a valid option, but it could be a great place to start learning things from, and a great place to learn how I know that I don't know that, and I think I'm satisfied with that.
30 seconds.
Now I'm going to be a more model citizen than helping other people. And Larry, what do you got? Let's close out.
All the usual. Don't worry about going to heaven or hell, because everybody's going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about is when hells and heavens and souls are actually proven to exist. At this point, after 2,500 years, they have never been demonstrated to exist. And I want to thank all of our guests for coming on the show at such short notice and doing such a great job. You have an open invitation to call back into the show, or we can just do this again whenever you like. our me show is you show. It's order. Anyway, this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Everybody say bye.
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 Goodbye.
Bye. And we'll see you next week, 7 o'clock. Take care. Bye-bye.